This is one in a series of podcasts produced by the Department of Classics at the University of Cincinnati. In this series, you'll be hearing from scholars who have visited the department to deliver lectures and took the time to sit down with us to share some of their research and thoughts about the study of the ancient Mediterranean world. Brian Rose is the James B. Pritchard Professor of Archaeology in the Department of Classical Studies at the University of Pennsylvania and Curator in Charge of the Mediterranean Collection of the University Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology. He's a trustee of the American Academy in Rome, the English language editor of Studia Troica, former vice president of the American Research Institute in Turkey, and former president of the Archaeological Institute of America, a position he held from 2007 to 2011. Currently, he's the AIA's 2012-2013 Joukowsky Lecturer, which has brought him back to Cincinnati, where he taught in UC's Classics Department from 1987 to 2005. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, my pleasure.
You've worked in Turkey now for many years, at Aphrodisias, at Troy, Gordion, and in the Granicus River Valley. What sorts of themes or approaches would you say unify this work for you?
I suppose the collaboration with other Turkish archaeologists, and that really has become the most important feature of foreign excavations in Turkey today. There was always a strong relationship between foreign archaeologists and Turkish archaeologists, and at most excavations there was a kind of international spirit, an international climate, with archaeologists drawn from a variety of countries. Now what I notice is a kind of change. The rise in nationalism in many countries is a noteworthy feature in archaeology, but especially in Turkey. Fewer and fewer foreign archaeologists are being granted permits to work in Turkey, and some of the permits that have been in the hands of foreign archaeologists, non-Turkish archaeologists, are being taken away. So if I look forward to what archaeology in Turkey will be like in the future, more and more of the excavation permits that have been in non-Turkish hands in the past will move to Turkish archaeologists in the future. So even though there has always been a strong collaborative spirit between Turkish and non-Turkish archaeologists, it's going to have to be fortified in the future if these international partnerships that have been such a standard feature of Turkish archaeology are to go forward. So I suspect that what we should be doing is bringing more and more Turkish archaeologists to American programs, and more American archaeologists should be spending some time at Turkish universities in order to continue this kind of partnership that's been so successful in the past.
What have been some of the most positive things to come out of collaboration with colleagues in Turkish excavations or in projects in Turkey?
Well, if I think of Troy in particular, I would say that there are two of them. One of the major conclusions that's resulted from our work at Troy is a reconstruction of the movement of the coastline over time. And we couldn't have done that without the expertise of a geologist named İlhan Kayan, who teaches at Ege University in Izmir. He brought an entire team from the university in Izmir to do core sampling or drilling in the plain between the northern edge of the Trojan Mound and the current coastline of the Dardanelles or the Hellespont. And over the course of 15 years of work, he was able to chart the movement of the coastline over the course of the last 5,000 years. This is something that he was uniquely qualified to do that geologists from other countries, I think, would have had a little more difficulty with. The other collaborative effort of which I'm especially proud is our work with the local museum, the museum in Çanakkale. There were a series of tombs in the vicinity of the Granicus River, which is about a two-hour drive east of Troy, that had been plundered in 2004 and in 2008. You know, Turkey is developing rapidly. There are new highways that are going in everywhere. And with new highways come new construction equipment. And the construction equipment can be used by thieves at night to try to rob burial mounds or tumuli. And so as new construction increases, the pace of looting increases as well. And this was especially the case with tombs in the Granicus River Valley. So we partnered with the Çanakkale Museum on the survey and rescue excavation of a number of these tombs and published them together within or nearly within a year or a couple years of their discovery. So we were able to get some of the most exciting new funerary discoveries in northwestern Turkey out in published form in record time. And that's because both of the partners were working with such energy and such a collaborative spirit.
That said, what are your future plans at this point for continuing work in Turkey?
I'm going to be continuing excavations at Gordion in central Turkey beginning this summer. We're going to start the excavation of a monumental road that bisects the citadel mound of Gordion, which should yield material from the early Phrygian, middle Phrygian, and late Phrygian periods, so from the 10th century BC through the end of the Persian period, and tell us a lot about Persian administration at the site. I've done some remote sensing of the area around the entrance to the gate or to the street, and it looks as if there was a monumental gate that still lies buried there, that courtesy of magnetic prospection. So my hope is that we'll have a whole panoply of new discoveries to share with those who are interested in Phrygian archaeology by next year.
Could you say a little bit more about the prospection you've done before, just for people who aren't familiar with pre-excavation techniques like this?
Yeah, with prospection or remote sensing, of course, remote sensing is something that archaeologists use as much as they can these days. And that ties into the basic principle of archaeology, which is that archaeology is destruction. And the irony is that in order to reconstruct history, you have to destroy it, in that on your way down exploring different layers, you're taking away the buildings, streets, monuments that you find as you excavate further down. So you want to make sure that the areas where you're digging are most potentially productive for excavation. The prospection or magnetic prospection that we've done at Troy was incredibly enlightening for our understanding of the history of the site. And by magnetic prospection, I mean examining an area with a machine called a magnetometer that measures variations in the magnetic fields of buried objects. So determining magnetic anomalies, and thus giving us an idea of subsurface features, where they're located and what they look like. This, as I say, has been very successful at Troy and equally successful at Gordion. I started doing this 5 or 6 years ago. I stopped all excavation because publication was so far behind, but I didn't want to stop field work because I thought the Ministry of Culture in Ankara would be angry if we didn't have any field work whatsoever. So I began a major program of remote sensing, specifically magnetic prospection, which had never been done at Gordion before. And we were successful in finding the outer fortification walls of the city and showing that the city was twice as large as we thought it was.
This seems to be a theme of your work with Troy, as well as sort of expanding the idea of what ancient cities are and, you know, what a sort of walled city looks like as far as where people might live and what the sort of final line of defenses is. Is this similar to the way Troy looks, the sort of new picture of Gordion that this has made clear?
Yeah, I would say it's very similar to Troy. With magnetic prospection at Troy, we were able to determine the outer defensive ditch that encircled the residential district of the site, the so-called Lower City, of late Bronze Age date. And the same sort of thing we've done at Gordion. And that, too, has enabled us to determine the inner and outer fortifications much more clearly than we were able to do in the past, although the fortifications at Gordion are a little later in date. Those at Troy that we found date to the late 15th and 14th centuries BC. Those at Gordion date probably to the 8th century BC.
So another big step in your career has been your presidency of the AIA. Now that you've left that position, how have goals from your work with AIA carried over into your teaching, your publication, and your work with the museum at University of Pennsylvania?
I would say the program that is carried over the most is the cultural heritage sensitivity training program that I began for troops deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan. I began this in 2004 once I realized that the Department of Defense wasn't providing any pre-deployment training in cultural heritage protection, and the troops had no idea of the importance of the libraries, the museums, and the archaeological sites that they were now charged with protecting, areas to which we were no longer able to go. So this training program gradually expanded to include most of the bases in the U.S. from which troops were deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan, and on occasion, the Department of Defense and the State Department would allow me to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and do the training there. And even though I'm no longer president of the AIA, I've continued that training, although now it's primarily only at one fort, Fort Dix in central New Jersey, from which troops are being deployed to a variety of places, but Afghanistan is one of them.
And looking back at the course of this program, how successful would you say it's been? Are there things that you'd like to see changed or implemented in the future that might make conditions on the ground different?
I would say there are several things that should happen. First, how successful has it been? It's difficult for us to monitor how successful it's been. I know only the kinds of emails that I get from soldiers who have deployed to either Somalia or Iraq or Afghanistan. But in those emails, they will say, we saw a looter plundering an archaeological site and we stopped him. Or we were digging for an extension of the military base where we're stationed and we saw that the soil in the digging changed color from brown to red. And as you told us, we assumed that we were probably in the vicinity of a mud brick building. And so we stopped excavation, we alerted our commander, and we decided to dig somewhere else because there was a danger of dismantling or destroying an ancient structure. So as long as I get a few emails like that every year, I think the program will have been worthwhile. I think that kind of program needs to be continued no matter what, because wars will continue to happen no matter what progress we make in other areas of technology. And cultural property will always be at risk. And so archaeologists always need to interface in some way like this with the military in order to ensure that the kinds of destructions that occurred in Iraq and Afghanistan toward the beginning of the war aren't repeated. In a sense, it's a continuation of something that started in World War II with the Monuments Men, men and women who were academics and joined forces with the military to identify and repatriate works of art and antiquities that had been stolen by the Nazis and transported to other parts of the German Reich. And then that connection between archaeology and the military disintegrated during the Vietnam War as more and more academics marched in the streets against the war. And more academics developed a mistrust for the military, as the military did for academics. And that's why there was no link between archaeology and the military at the time in which these wars started. So no matter what happens, we need to continue this interface, and we need to understand that those programs need to be politically neutral. Our job as members of the AIA is not to take sides in wars. There are other organizations that specialize in that. Our job is to take sides only regarding the rights of antiquities that are threatened by war.
Protection of Afghanistan's cultural heritage is obviously an ongoing concern. So what do you see as some of the biggest challenges moving forward?
I'm very worried about 2014, which is next year, when the NATO forces leave the country. It was clear to me when I was in Afghanistan a year and a half ago, in southern Afghanistan, that the Taliban will take over at least some parts of the country very rapidly once NATO leaves, conceivably a great deal of the country. When that happens, not only will women lose the rights for which they fought so energetically over the course of the last 13 years, but cultural heritage, cultural property will again be placed in great danger, as the Bamiyan Buddhas were in 2001 when they were exploded. So, as archaeologists, we need to become stronger diplomats. We can't just content ourselves with sitting in a library or digging a trench. We need to learn something about government and about reaching out to archaeological organizations in other countries, as well as diplomats in other countries, so that we don't speak with conflicting forces, but rather with one voice, almost like a United Nations of archaeologists, focused on the preservation of cultural heritage, especially in areas where armed conflict has begun or is about to begin.
I think that's a great message to conclude with, and I'd like to thank you again, Brian, for joining me today to talk about some of your work and your thoughts on archaeologists' responsibilities and some of the ways that we can be better ambassadors for the discipline moving forward.
Thank you.
This concludes the podcast, but you can find more from this and other series at our website, classics.uc.edu/podcasts. Or look us up on iTunes and leave a review on our Facebook page, facebook.com/classics.uc. To learn more about our outreach program of public lectures, email us at outreach@classics.uc.edu. These podcasts have been made possible in part by the support of a society outreach grant from the Archaeological Institute of America. For more information, you can visit their website, archaeological.org.